to the Healing Grief Podcast with Catherine Churchill, and regularly joined by a variety of different guests, all helping you travel through your journey of grief.
Hi everyone, I'm here with Aisling Boyd, the founder of CB Safety. Aisling is here to share her story on how losing her father to a workplace fatality motivated her to become an advocate for workplace safety. Welcome, Aisling.
Hi, Catherine.
So did you want to start just by sharing your story?
Yeah, so it all began, ironically, today is the 17th. So it was 3 years and 8 months that my family was impacted to a workplace fatality after losing my dad. So on May 16th of 2017, my dad went to work. He was an owner and operator of his own landscaping company called Shamrock Garden and Landscaping in Toronto. He was an immigrant from Ireland, had immigrated when he was 20, and had been in business for 39 years. May 16, 2017 was no different than any other ordinary workday. He went to work, went to the job site, worked with his employees, and at this particular job site, he was working on a steep embankment, harnessed and anchored in. So even though he was the owner, my dad was very hands-on on a lot of the projects that he had completed. And so when he was harnessed and anchored in, he had pivot to say something to an employee and actually lost his balance. And the two anchor points failed, which resulted in my dad falling down a hill bank. And then he continued to fall and dropped down a 7-foot retaining wall and actually ended up in a window well. He managed to get out of the window well, but he immediately collapsed. And before landing that window well, he did smack his head off of the brick wall of the home. So at that point, they, of course, called the ambulance. They rushed him to the hospital. I live about, you know, a 4-hour flight from my family. I live in Western Canada, and this incident happened in Toronto, but I was actually home when it all had happened because I was attending a work event. And so I got a call from my brother, who was the first to be called. He was actually down the street from the hospital and had just told me I was at an event. And so it was ironic that my brother was even calling me because we had this thing where we just don't call each other during working hours. And so I just knew immediately that something was wrong. And so I picked up the phone and I asked him what was wrong. And he said dad had been in a serious accident. I said, where is he? He told me and I literally hung up and I ran out of the conference. And so as I made my way to the hospital, which was the most downtown point you could ever get in Toronto. So amongst all the traffic and obviously the worryness and obviously everything that was going through my mind, I made it down there. And as I ran into Emerge, I obviously had no idea where I was going. And a gentleman could tell that I was completely lost. So I shared my name and he said that he would direct me to where my brother was. So I thought as we're walking down the hallway, I would see my brother at some point and I didn't. And then we turned a corner and I was brought into a private room. So I found my brother sitting all alone. I asked him what had happened and he said that he hadn't given an update. And at that point, my sister was also on her way down with my mom. And so they shortly ran into the room as well. And the surgeon just rushed in and said that we had to proceed with having my dad have surgery because of his fall. He had severe head trauma. And really, the surgeon told me he was like, if you don't do the surgery, there's a high possibility your dad is going to die. And so I didn't even know exactly what had happened. We obviously just knew it was so severe and it was kind of really my worst nightmare. Like the night before my dad and I were planning our trip to Ireland, I was extremely close with my dad. I always referred to him as my one-stop person. He was my dad, of course. He was my best friend. He was my travel buddy. He was my financial advisor. He was my coach. He was literally everything to me. And so it was really something I couldn't process what was happening. I really thought it was a complete nightmare, and your worst nightmare is starting to come to life and you can't really comprehend it by any means. And so, they brought us into another room, and at the time we believed my dad was going into surgery, but after so much time, and I couldn't tell you how much time it had passed, they reconvened my family and said that as they tried to move him into surgery, they couldn't proceed with the operation because his organs starting to shut down. So prior to this, as soon as my dad had arrived, he was already in a coma and on life support. And so they said that they wanted to monitor him and just see if he would progress and get any better. And over that time, he didn't. And so we had a father who, like I said, was an immigrant from Ireland, such a hard worker. He really built a business from nothing and provided an incredible life for my family. He is a true, you know, successor when it comes to an entrepreneur that had really no possessions or money to his name when he first immigrated to Toronto. And so even with that mentality, my dad would indirectly tell us, you know, when my time has come, that's it. He's like, you never put me on life support. I've done my time. I've done my purpose. Let me go. But when you're really faced with that reality, I went against his wishes. And so the doctor told us that science was showing him that he wasn't going to make it, but he was really hoping Mother Nature could prove him wrong. And he said, we can continue to keep him on life support for 12 hours. And I said, yes, even though I knew my dad would be very mad at that decision. I really obviously did not care at that point. And of course, my mom, my brother, my sister, we collectively made that decision together. We had other friends and family that also came. And at this point, we also had his two brothers. He had two brothers in Toronto and two brothers in Ireland. And the brothers, and all of our family in Ireland were on flights at this point, knowing that it wasn't going to be good. And so we stayed all night. And it was the most traumatic thing. And I say to people, you know, sitting beside your father's bedside, the man that brought you into the world, protected you, loved you, and I'm holding his hand and he's not gripping back. And as much as I didn't want the worst of the worst outcome to happen, I just knew he was slipping away. So as they reconvened our family 12 hours later, they did tell us that he had actually passed at some point during the night. And I just went completely numb. So, you know, from that circumstance, not only was grief so prevalent, and I had lost a few of my grandparents prior, which sadly you kind of do expect at some point in your life. And we do know that our parents are going to go at some point. And at that stage, I was 26. And so I was incredibly grateful that I had 26 years with him, because so many other children don't have their parents that long. But then I also had a father who I was just sitting at the kitchen table the night before. I actually heard him leave for work that morning and meant to go downstairs and wish him a safe day. But I decided to hit snooze a couple times. And then within 24 hours, I lost my one stop person. And so from that experience, you know, it takes a few months to process it. And I'd taken possession of my first home, which he was supposed to fly out and help me build all the IKEA furniture. But I made it through it. But as a father, he raised my siblings and I to take our challenges and turn them into something good. And I really didn't know what to believe of that at the time. Because I'm like, how on earth am I supposed to take your sudden death and turn it into something good? Now I just have to navigate this new reality, figure out my new identity as well. And then his business was changing. My brother took over for some point, and we did close it a year and a half after his death. And we were very fortunate. Like, he really did set up his death. And I learned a lot from him, as much as when losing him, I was kind of mad. Cause I'm like, I thought he never prepared me. I was like, out of all things, I'm like, you never prepare me for this. Like, I would talk to him and get furious. And then I realized, well, you did. You did teach me. You gave me all the tools indirectly to prepare this. And since then, I've created my will, because that's what he did when he was in his 20s. You know, I've established all that. And again, that's where we were so fortunate. We didn't really have to be concerned from that standpoint, because he did literally plan his death and our future for the worst case scenario. And that did happen. And so from that aspect, that was, I guess, good learnings in some aspects, even though you don't want to go through a loss of a loved one to learn that. But I did. But as things started to evolve, what really came front and center was, how did he die? Well, my dad died to a workplace fatality. And ironically, 2 years before that, I was working for a company, and they were a national sponsor of an organization here in Canada called Threads of Life that advocates for workplace safety and help families impacted by a workplace incident, whether that's a fatality, a life-altering disease, or an illness. And so I've been exposed to this organization. They do an annual walk. I had attended to represent the company, and I had attended that walk 2 years in a row. And the second walk was 2 weeks before my dad's incident. And like, you know, our father-daughter relationship, I would always call my dad, and I called him after that walk, told him about the stories I had learned. And my dad was very safety conscious. He was extremely strict. And then 2 weeks later, I became an example of someone that was affected by a workplace fatality. So I was like, well, I got to do something. I can't exactly just sit back and grieve and yes, move through life. I'm like, no one should lose a loved one to a workplace fatality. We all have to go to work and we have to make it home. But yet in Canada, I can share that there are three families every day that find out that their loved one is not returning home. Three families. That really adds up over the course of the year. And really every day it just starts to accumulate. Globally, last year, there was 2.78 million workplace fatalities recorded. And so even though there's a ton of organizations out there that are advocating for safety, they're adjusting their safety culture, there's people sharing their stories like myself, there's really this massive needle that we need to move. And that's where I felt, well, I'm now another person with an authentic story. I need to share that. And so since then, I've really been more embedded in workplace safety. My job has also been adjusted. I now work solely for a safety company. And so it's really propelled my passion even more as a result of my loss. And so really at the end of the day, I want to do as much as I can to prevent any other daughter or loved one to go through my loss. Like I said, we all go to work in any facet, whether you're a janitor, you know, a truck driver, a doctor, a lawyer, we all go to work. And it doesn't mean to say that you have to work on a job site in order to be more conscious of your safety. Yes, that's obviously important, but regardless of what you're doing, yes, go to work and do the best you can, but also do the best you can to make it home to your family every night, because it really leaves behind a ripple effect. And unfortunately, since I've been more embedded in this community, I just continue to learn more and more stories. And so I would say in that aspect, being an advocate for workplace safety, when it comes to grief, it's kind of helped me in some way. You know, to elaborate more on the grief experience, it was so foreign to me. And I didn't like that I couldn't turn to my dad to get help. Because obviously, you know, as we grow up and everything is new, you know, in some cases, some people are fortunate. And I was one of them to have parents that can kind of guide us. And I have a lovely mom, but she was also grieving the loss of her husband of 36 years. And we actually lost my grandpa 3 days after the fact. So not only did she lose her husband to a workplace fatality, then she loses her father. So then this just immense amount of grief that you just can't comprehend. And I remember the first 2 weeks, I didn't even cry. And my mom is like, why aren't you crying? I'm like, I don't know. I keep Googling like numb. And they say that's one of the stages. Like, that's how foreign I was. I couldn't make sense of it. I was like, I just lost like my best friend, the most important, one of the most important person in my life. And I can't feel a damn thing. Eventually I started feeling things. And so again, with my dad, he would always be like, you take action, gotta vocalize your feelings. Again, I told you he was my psychologist, he was my counselor. So I'm like, okay, well, I gotta take action right away. I had this incredible company and they had an employee assistance program. I'm like, I'm gonna entertain this. I'm like, I don't know if I'm depressed. I don't know if I have anxiety. Like, I just don't know what I'm doing because I feel so foggy and I don't feel myself. And they went and they did an assessment. And they said, you're strictly grieving. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of good. Cause I do know some people unfortunately can kind of go the other end. And my family does have, mental health, is pretty relevant in a lot of my family members, but my dad and I were never impacted. And so anyways, I entertained grief counseling and it again really opened my eyes to really kind of understand where I was positioned when it came to grief. I mentioned I have two older siblings. My brother's 8.5 years older than me. My sister's 5.5 years older than me. And I just remember when I was going through grief counseling and, you know, I would go for my one-on-one sessions, just some of the things that they highlighted was just something, again, I never knew. So I really learned a lot about the process and not just, you know, brushing it off and moving forward. Like I really had to sit in it, address it, don't get stuck, and then move forward. And so I did all of this action and this work, and I eventually did go into a group counseling session, which was phenomenal because I was put in a group where other people had lost a parent. So I started to relate even to strangers more so than I could relate from my mom and my siblings because we were all grieving on so many different levels. And in some cases, we just couldn't connect or relate, but yet these strangers, I could. And so I was very grateful. It's our health authority here in Alberta that offers free grief counseling. And so since then, I've actually relayed that to other people who, unfortunately, I know have lost a loved one. And it also has helped them too. I do find that I've also just been more of that person when it comes to grief. People come to me or, you know, I action and I'm reaching out, even if they're not a close friend, still just obviously acknowledging their loss. I think that's one thing. It becomes such an awkward topic because no one knows how to deal with it. And it is complicated. It's sad and it's challenging. Everyone has different experiences. And I think that's where I've gotten more embedded in learning about it, you know, listening to podcasts like yourself, Catherine, and just learning from other people's experience. It's just made me more open to it because the reality is, yes, we're all going to die. We don't know how. And yes, we're going to lose our loved ones. Again, we don't know how. Some are sudden, some are expected. But regardless, it's just still a very complicated emotional thing that we need to deal with. And you need to deal with it. You need to address it because some of the people I learned in this group, there was one girl who didn't even address her father's death, and that was 13 years prior. And she was actually in there addressing her mother's death that happened 5 years prior. And what really had happened, it started opening the woodworks of what had happened when she lost her dad. And so there was a lot of work there that she needed to focus on. And so I think for anyone who's out there who knows of someone who's, you know, lost a loved one or you are one yourself, like you really do want to address it. But again, I thought for myself, oh, I'm going full throttle. I'm addressing these concerns. I'm learning the coping mechanisms. I'm now 3 years and 8 months. And during the pandemic, I realized I'm still a work in progress because there have been times, especially I find in the third year, I felt like I was going backward. And I'm like, oh my gosh, did everything that I just put effort into learning and addressing, did that all just go away? Like, am I now back to day one when I'm told that I no longer have my dad with me? But it's like anything in life, you know, you got to put the work in. And unfortunately, it's just something that's going to be a work in progress for the rest of my life. I understand it's going to be easy, but also my life keeps changing. And as a result of that, the grief starts to adjust because I lost my dad when I was 26. I've always been career driven, but I've evolved my career and now I'm in a committed relationship and hoping to have, you know, start a family. And that's a whole chapter that he's missing. And that comes with a whole layer of different emotions and grief that I now also have to deal with. And so that's been my journey up to this point right now.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And I've actually had two other younger people, I think probably around your age, that would have lost parents. And they have sort of said the same thing on the podcast, that grief changes, through your age and through things you go through. So, you know, marriage, life circumstances. And I think you do, in some way, it's like you re-grieve the person over and over again through each stage of your life, which I've definitely been through myself. So thank you for talking about that as well. And, I've already told you, I really didn't have an understanding of workplace safety. And this has really opened my eyes to it. So, I mean, why do you think that it's just, you know, it's not spoken about?
It's a great question, Catherine. I mean, there are people who are out there, just not on the mass level. You know, everyone that I've been in contact from organizations to other people who have either gone through a loss or a workplace incident, they're doing their little piece, but there's never been this larger movement. So there is a lot of effort out in the world, and I want to give credit to those people. And why isn't it addressed as much as, you know, the other diseases out there? I have no idea, but I wouldn't be surprised yourself and the people listening that if you think about even just your circle of 10 and then their contacts, that there's probably been someone that's been impacted by a workplace incident, not even just fatality. And for myself, my career, I do travel quite a bit. I mean, this is obviously prior to COVID, and even just meeting individuals, you know, on planes, and you start chatting and they'll ask me what I do. I work in safety, and then workplace safety just kind of organically comes into conversations. And the amount of people I've met that had told me, oh yes, my wife lost her father, you know, 40 years ago, and that was a workplace incident. I just learned that my grandfather's brother had died on the farm back in Ireland, and he then had to take over the farm. I didn't even know that. So not only did in my dad's family, literally history repeated itself, I'm sure it's also being repeated in other people's family chains as well. And it's something that can be prevented. Mm-hmm. It is complicated because there's so many aspects of safety. As we all know, there's different applications for every job imaginable. So that's, I think, where it becomes even more complicated rather than those set diseases that are out. So I think that's also where there's such a juggle in trying to address this issue, and also trying to come up with a key solution. But there are many companies out there that I have to, you know, praise for raising the awareness. I saw one company, I believe they're in the UK, and there's a sign right before you pull into the parking lot says, whatever you do today, make it your best effort to return home to your family. You know, but there's still a lot of work to do ahead, because even through this discussion, there's about 5 workplace incidents or more that have been reported already. So it's outstanding, the statistics that come with it.
Statistics are just mind blowing, actually.
It is. Mm. It is. And again, that's what's been recorded. Unfortunately, there's some people that don't record. That's so true. You can only imagine how much else it's how much larger it is.
Yeah, so what sort of, I guess, for people that are, you know, in Canada, and I think you do work worldwide anyway, so what sort of services does your business offer people, both, you know, in person and, you know, online, virtually?
Yeah, so in terms of the... I kind of created myself my own brand, and it really just came about during the pandemic. So really at this point, I mean, I can share my story. I do have contacts that I then, you know, share with other people that I become in contact with. I'm also supporting a lot of safety foundations, sharing my story like this on podcasts. But in terms of support, if you reside in Canada, there is a phenomenal organization, which I really latched onto, called Threads of Life. And they do help any family that's impacted by a workplace incident. And that really falls under fatality, life-altering disease, or illness. And so that was the organization that introduced me to workplace safety 2 years before my dad's incident. And at the time, I only thought they hosted a walk in May of every year, just to bring that awareness. But what I then eventually learned when I reached out, and this was when I was at the time where I'm like, hey, I got to do something about this. I lost my dad to workplace incident, what can I do to try and help another daughter prevent even just one fatality? And so I reached out to them. I said, I want to, you know, volunteer for your walk. And then they knew about their story, and they're like, this is why we exist. And I'm like, well, I know you raise awareness. And they're like, no, we offer services. And so from there, I was actually put in touch with one of their family peer individuals. And it was another daughter who had lost her father 10 years before. So again, she was a great person I can reach out to, kind of like a counselor, even though they're not put through that learning or coaching. But I could just call her, and we really find out just how many similarities we have between our two stories. And again, it was just great to kind of confide in someone who got it. And then from there, then they put me into their speakers bureau training for me to give me opportunities to share my story with a lot of the organizations that reach out to the cause. Again, a lot of organizations that were very focused on safety culture or wanted to adjust that and improve that. And then I also do support our Calgary Planning Committee here, because every major city in Canada hosts a walk in May. Obviously, the pandemic has changed that. It's gone more virtual. But I do, I assist the Planning Committee here. So that would be a big organization, I would say, in Canada, Threads of Life. The walk is called Steps for Life, that they have phenomenal services that can help other people. Now, globally, I've been in the works and, you know, connecting with other people. There's an individual in England, Dr. Andrew Sharman. He just published a book called 1% Safer. And that's where he shared a lot of those statistics. And he is trying to address a movement to see how we can obviously start to move this needle And so just a lot more safety advisors and educators and advisors that I've been in touch with to try and see, you know, what more can I do other than sharing this authentic story, but trying to help others that are impacted. So no matter where you live, feel free to contact me. I'm sure I have a contact that can support you in some manner, or will know obviously the appropriate services that reside in your designated area to give you the support that you need.
Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to just to talk a little bit about, so, you know, just, I guess I was thinking about, you lost your dad very suddenly. So do you have any tips for my listeners, for someone who may have lost someone suddenly, versus somebody who's, you know, grieving somebody that had a lengthy illness?
Yeah, it's another great question. I mean, I think for that question alone, it can be complicated because all of us come to the table with different experiences.
Maybe just something that you know, steps maybe that you took, or
I think for me it was sudden. I couldn't change the outcome. If I kept dwelling on his loss, I knew it just wasn't going to do me any good. And my brother always had to have the saying, what's the return on investment that we're going to give back to dad? And this was just in any facet of our life. Not that my dad would ever want anything in return. He just wanted his kids to have the happiest and healthiest life. And it was crazy for me to think that all he wanted was me to be a healthy girl and happy girl. And I wasn't fully happy. And I'm like, well, that's just a waste of all of your effort. So as much as I'm not going to be, you know, at my hat, yes, I'm happy, but obviously I'd be even more happy if he was still alive, that I really take the time to address what I did have, address the memories. Like even today, I'll be honest, when the 17th of the month comes, sometimes I'm good. Even weeks or days before, I kind of struggle and it really bothers me even after 3 years and 8 months. But it also, that phrase, grief is the price that you pay for love, I wouldn't change it. So I think gratitude really kind of plays a big role in my healing process, because it was very hard to comprehend when you had a father that you were just having dinner the night before and planning this trip, and then the next day he's in this hospital bed and helpless, and then he's gone. It's it takes a while for you to wrap. So I think having the space and the patience, which I have no patience, was a big tester for me, and also honoring myself and giving myself grace and being proud of myself, you know, to be like, hey, I've made it this far, and there's other coping mechanisms that I need to address too. And I've also been vetting that to other people who have been in my scenarios in terms of what works for you. And I think entertaining counseling, I know some people might be opposed to it, but it's like, you have nothing to lose. Even if you just go to one session, you know, that's one session. It really won't harm you in any manner. You might just learn something. And one of the tactics as well is that because it was so sudden and, you know, shortly after it was my birthday, and then it was like, would have been his anniversary and like all these milestones that like, I couldn't give him any experiences, or it was Father's Day. And I'd already planned Father's Day and he was gone 4 weeks before. So I've taken little tidbits where, whether it's his birthday or Christmas, like I used to go to a Starbucks and buy a gift card and then tell the barista to give it to someone who orders a cappuccino, because my dad liked cappuccinos. I'm like, I can't gift him anymore, but I can gift someone else. But now I've changed that and I now donate to mental health because my dad was a huge advocate for that. You know, so it's like these little things that you'll start to, I think, figure how to continue to embed them in your life, even though they're not physically there. Because I think that was also when they're stripped apart from you emotionally and physically so sudden, you never want them to be fully gone. And so I've worked really hard to still continue to have him fully in my life, and as much to whatever capacity that might be. It keeps adjusting, like I said, over the last 3.5 years, and it will keep doing that. But yeah, for anyone where they've had a sudden death, just try and hone in obviously the good. I think that will help you get through the day, because really dwelling in it, we have to address it. We have to address the sadness. But I just think of all the effort that he put into giving me this amazing life that I wouldn't want to fail him or make all of that effort a waste of his time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, knowing that there's, I guess, no time frame on grief as well, and that it is a process, and I don't think we have to be at any one stage. Because things are just constantly changing. Yeah.
And I would want to jump around those stages. I did not follow those stages to a T.
Yeah. Well, nobody does.
No. And I know some people will say they did, but I'm like, well, you just dropped back to being really angry.
Exactly.
Acceptance. And, you know, and just the triggers. It's really the triggers that kind of come out of nowhere where I'm like, I'm having a great day and work is great and my boyfriend and I could be doing something fun. And then I see a little girl racing after her dad, who's 4 years old. And I had that experience. And yet it's just the heart sinks, starts crippling, and I just want to start crying. And I'm like, so it comes out of nowhere. But again, it's like you got to address it and go through it and be aware of it. Be very self-aware of it is a major thing. And then you kind of just have to take it by there. But you really just need to give yourself grace and patience, as much as that might be a struggle for some. I know it was for me. But you really have to look at the long term too. Like, always remember, it's temporary. Whatever your sadness and your pain is, yes, that pain will never fully go away, but your state of, you know, uncontrollable sadness, it's temporary, and you might be better in 12 hours, in 24 hours, you know, or in 72. So again, it's just something that it's a big test, but you think of all the other people in the world who've also gone through it, and they've gone through it. And that was, again, my dad's mentality. If other people can go through it, so can you. I'm like, okay, that person's gone through a loss, I can do this too. And you just kind of keep plugging away, because again, with it being so sudden, what I learned is life is so fragile. You know, we're, like I already addressed, we're going to die. But I'll be honest, I've had this massive fear that's overcome me. Again, this is what counseling is amazing for, and they can identify this for you. The fear of the unknown and the fear of me not knowing when I'm going to die, and thinking I could die like how he did. Obviously, I hope I don't die to a workplace fatality, but I just don't know how much time I have left. So I'm going to go full throttle and I'm going to do as much as I can in my life, which seems a little bit extreme for some people. But that's really how my mind has really switched. That happened, because I'm like, you go from a full bone, healthy person, loving life, and just he's loving every facet. And he got to a stage which was even harder. As an entrepreneur, he was so, he hustled and he hustled and he hustled. And yes, he was really enjoying it the last, you know, 5-7 years before his death. And honestly, my dad didn't have to work, but he just had a passion for it. And so that's another thing that we addressed, is that he died doing something that he loved, but his life was also robbed from him. And he's missed out on, you know, his other granddaughters and his first grandson being born and all other milestones that will come from it. So I can really blabber on that question. I'm sorry, Catherine, but I guess
no,
in the end, it's
everything you've said, I think, is just being so valuable today. And, you know, you've obviously taken some inspiration and motivation from something so terrible to, you know, try and help others. So I'm so thankful that you were able to share your story on, you know, workplace safety and workplace fatality, and share your dad's story. And where can people find you? So you've got Instagram.
I'm on Instagram. So c.b.safety. Safety is what it's called. So use my dad's initials to create that. And then I'm also on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So you can find me under CB Safety as well.
Okay. Well, we do have to go, but thank you so much for joining the podcast.